kit. It was a short-barreled weapon with a tip of fused metal. "Is that one of those lightning things? The ones the Tau brought?" Carlos broke off because instead of answering him, I unleashed a bolt of energy with the weapon, scorching the second hatch we'd failed to open. The blowback wasn't that bad, but the jolt of current that came up from the hull into my boots and into my toes hurt. "Shit!" screeched Carlos, hopping from foot to foot. "You buzzed me, you crazy mother!" I gave a little hop, allowing myself to float above the surface of the hull, and squeezed the trigger again. The weapon blazed into life. This time, I held it down until the power bar registered empty, and the blazing arc of blue-white electricity died to a few sparks. "You bastard!" Carlos said, clumping up close to me. He had to crank back his head to look up at me. "My feet feel like they're numb, and my teeth hurt!" I pointed toward the smoking hole below me. The center of the hatch had been burned clean through. "Stop complaining and stick your arm in there. You should be able to blow the hinges." Grumbling, he did as I asked. Meanwhile, Natasha threw me a line, and I reeled myself back in.
"You could have fried us with that stunt," she complained. "Or at least yourself."
"Yeah," I said, "but we don't have much time. If we can't get into the station, we're as good as dead anyway." A few minutes later, we had the smoldering hatch pried open. We wriggled into an airlock, and then the passage beyond. Fortunately, there wasn't any resistance. After following a labyrinth of tunnels, we found our way onto the deserted streets. The first sign of enemy activity we saw came from a large gang that roved along at street level, smashing air car windows and tipping over anything they could. They seemed to be having a good time. The second they caught sight of us, however, their demeanor changed. They froze as one and turned in our direction. I'd seen this behavior before. They were going to charge us.
"Turn it on, Natasha," I said.
"It is on," she hissed back.
"Well, it's not frigging working," Carlos shouted unnecessarily. "It might take some time," I began. But Carlos already had his rifle out and up. I smashed it down.
"Hold your fire, that's an order."
"Are you crazy? We'll all be permed."
"No, we won't,"
I said with a confidence I didn't feel.
"Natasha is relaying our data. We'll catch a revive on Minotaur if..."
That was all the time the gang of around 300 rebels gave me. They charged us in a silent wave. They'd seen something unlike themselves, homed in on it, and decided as a single mass mind to make their move.
"Behind us!" screeched Kiwi.
I turned in her direction. Another mass of rebels, bigger than the first group, had come around the corner. Maybe that's what the first group had been waiting for. I'll never know. All of them charged us from two sides. With a greedy, careless thirst for blood, they were so eager to reach us, they knocked one another down and trampled their own comrades. I'd seen this behavior before. Their very disregard for their own safety made them more dangerous. Fortunately, I didn't see any advanced weaponry on them. These were average citizens converted into raving lunatics by Claver's digital virus.
"All right," I shouted as they came in close. "Force blades out. If they get in melee range, you can take them out."
"So very considerate of you, McGill,"
Carlos said bitterly. We braced ourselves, putting our backs together in a circle. Our force blades shimmered and extended in deadly lines from our arms. I made sure Natasha and her device were in the center. The box she'd been babying since we'd left Minotaur buzzed and glowed. But judging by the enemy approach, it wasn't doing much.
"Hold them!" I shouted. "Hold the line!"
The wave of bodies lashed us like a torrent of water. Even inside my armor, I was rocked backward. Rebels launched themselves overhead, diving over the bodies of their comrades as I cut them down. I made an effort to stop those that were trying to climb over us to the center. I couldn't afford to have them take out Natasha. That wasn't as easy as it sounded because bodies were piling up fast, and the latest group to arrive climbed over the fallen up and up to where they almost slid over our helmets into the circle. Maybe they knew, I thought. How could they know? The line broke a moment later. I don't know who failed me. It didn't matter. Someone tripped or slid on blood and entrails. They went down, and there was a hole in the circle.
I stabbed and slashed, shortening down my blades to a half meter and thickening them up. I tried to shuffle toward the breach to close it, but I could barely move. There were so many squirming bodies all around me, living and dead. I was locked into place.
"They're on me, James," I heard Natasha say in despair. "They've got a hold on the box."
My heart sank. We were all going to die, crushed down by 1,000 raving lunatics. What a way to go. Then something changed. I don't quite know how I knew it, but the sensation was undeniable.
"They're slowing down," Carlos said. "They're running out of gas. You guys are going to pay."
"Don't," I shouted. "If they try to get away, let them."
Hansen was down. So was Gorman. As team leader, my helmet had automatically presented me with printed names around the bottom rim of my faceplate, which was now starred from impact. 7 names were red, indicating they'd been pulled down and killed. The rest were still green, including Natasha's.
"They're crawling away," Keevy said. "Let's kill them before they regroup."
"No," I roared.
"Let them go. That's an order."
Soon the fight was over. We were left with a mound of bodies 10 feet high. We had to climb out of there on our hands and knees with dead people shifting under us and sliding away under the weight of our banged-up armor. When at last we could see the artificial sky again, we gazed in dull amazement. The rebels were standing nearby. But they looked different. They weren't maroon and silver anymore. They were slate gray, like living granite statues sculpted into the shape of humanoids. They were everywhere, standing around in confusion.
"People of Tau Ceti,"
I said loudly, projecting my voice through a microphone in my suit.
"Listen to me. You've been freed."
They looked from one to another aghast and dazed.
"We need your help," I said. "You must walk among your own kind. Sneak upon them. Hug your loved ones. Free them as we freed you. Your projectors will pass on the cure, and you will all be saved."
They ignored me and backed away. They dripped with gore from their fallen comrades. They gazed in fear and disbelief from one to another.
"They're freaked out," Carlos said. "Too scared to help."
"Maybe it'll work anyway," Natasha said. "The virus I put into their holo suits will infect anyone they come into contact with, but it will take time."
"That's not good enough," I said, wading through corpses toward the retreating citizens.
"You have to work with us," I shouted after them. "Stop!"
The man nearest me paused and studied me.
"What do you offer us in return, Earthman?"
he asked. I shook my head and snorted in disbelief.
"Life," I shouted. "Liberty! You'll get your city back."
He shook his head.
"Get someone else. If I help, I'll die. No one will aid you without benefit."
"You'll die anyway," I told him. "The only way you'll live is if you cooperate."
He shook his head and turned to go.
"You don't understand us. I would help if I thought others would, but I know they won't. It is not our way. I'll look for a way down to the surface."
I stood there aghast. The plan had worked. The solution was in my grasp. But these people were too damned greedy and selfish to do anything for their fellows. Watching them walk away, I had to question my efforts today. Maybe they weren't worth the effort at all.
"That's so typical,"
Carlos complained as the citizens of Tau wandered away to find somewhere to hide. I looked at him and narrowed my eyes.
"Give me your imperial coins, Carlos," I said.
He appeared startled.
"What? What are you talking about?"
I grabbed him and a force blade extended in my hand.
"Give them to me. All of them. I know you've got them. People told me."
Carlos's eyes went to Keevy.
"Damn you, girl," he said.
I grinned. I had no idea whether Carlos had stolen any of the credits or not, but I'd figured it was a pretty good chance he had. Now my suspicions had been confirmed.
"It serves you right," Keevy said. "But I didn't tell him shit."
I looked at her.
"Yours too. They'll just get you permed in the end. Hand them over."
Grumbling, the two of them gave me about 100 coins. I had a suspicion that wasn't all of them, but I figured it would probably be enough. 1,000 imperial credits for each of you, paid in cold hard cash, I shouted at the retreating Tau. Get back here! The effect was dramatic. Not just a few of them stopped. They all did. Even the women, the elderly, and the injured stopped. They did a collective U-turn and crept back in my direction cautiously. I held up an imperial credit piece which was as golden and lustrous as their illusory clothing was drab. Here it is, I boomed. 1 coin now, and another when the crisis is over. Give your IDs to Natasha. Your claims will be made good. We got nearly 100 recruits. I ran out of coins and was unable to convert any more of them into evangelists. There was one thing that was good about the natural avarice of the Tau as people. They were industrious and reliable, as long as they were paid.
It's like the biggest union shop in the galaxy, Carlos laughed as they lined up and took their coins.
It's not enough, Natasha said.
I looked at her. Why not?
She shrugged. 100 people trying to convert a few others? They'll do it, but just enough to get paid. Then they'll hole up again. They won't risk themselves once the money runs out, and we don't have enough coins to bribe everyone on the station.
Nodding, I thought that one over for a second. The answer seemed obvious. I walked forward and waved my arms. Turning on my external speakers, I used my booming, amplified voice to cut through their chatter. More than anything, I was surprised by their lack of concern over the mound of dead that lay just a few feet away in the street. Seeing their own kind heaped up in a mass of death alarmed them, but it didn't sicken them or make them mourn as it would have a human population. These people were truly alien in their thinking.
I have a further proposition, I shouted. For every 10 Tau you convert and turn into new supporters, you'll get an additional coin.
There was a whispering of excitement around me.
No limits?
Demanded the first guy I'd recruited.
There are millions here. Surely you can't have that many coins.
He was suspicious, and rightfully so. I'd pretty much wiped out my supply of coins already.
There is a limit,
I said, doing some quick calculations in my head.
Tell your people they will have to work for you. You will share in their profits. They'll get half the amount. And the man below him will get half that, a quarter of the original bounty.
The man I'd talked to glared.
That's less than a credit after 10 people in the chain.
Yes, I said. Well, what do you care? You'll get their credits. Thousands and thousands of people will be paying up the line into your pockets.
The light of greed returned. I wasn't just offering them a fee now. I was offering to make them rich off the backs of others who toiled underneath them for less.
Who will pay this debt when it is accrued? Several of them demanded.
I'll give you a name, a rich businessman by the name of Adjunct Claver. Perhaps you've heard of him.
They looked from one to the next, quizzically. But one man had heard of Claver's exploits.
It's true, he said. I heard that man stole millions of credits from the central banks.
Then get out there, I roared. What are you waiting for? If you don't think I have enough money, you should be working fast to get your share before I run out.
That was it. They split up and rushed in every direction. There was new energy in their steps as they raced down every street, hurrying to do my bidding.
How will you pay them all?
Natasha said, coming to stand by me. I shrugged.
There are a lot of credits in their banks. And I bet if we shake down some of these Germanica pukes, they'll jingle with looted coins.
Carlos walked up, shaking his head.
Don't be fooled, he told Natasha. He has no intention of paying any of them. That's McGill in a nutshell. He sets up a pyramid scheme, gets these poor losers running around in circles thinking they'll get rich. Then he stiffs the lot of them.
Laughing, I had to agree with him. Carlos knew me too well.
Does it matter?
I asked them. They'll get their station back. They'll live to start again. I came here to save their greedy asses, and they can damn well help out with the job.
I thought the station was probably doomed, Carlos said.
I believe in these people, I said firmly. They built this place, and there's a serious profit to be made if they can repair it. Let's see if they're up to the task of helping themselves. It's all up to them now. No one argued about that. When the last of the gray figures vanished from the streets, heading to meet the rebels wherever they could find them, we turned around and headed for the pinnace again. We'd done what we could, whether it worked or not. Chapter 39. Nothing spreads like a digital virus. By the time we boarded the pinnace and cast off, the Tau we had liberated had infected over 3,000 of their comrades within hours. The next generation spread the effect much further. The rival projectors had no immunity to Natasha's virus, and it was overwriting Claver's original scripting like wildfire.
They'll retake Gelt Station within a few days, she said, and at that point, they'll want payment.
I waved her words away. Then Claver had better have a lot of cash saved up, I said. That's all I have to say. He's going to need it when they track him down. Carlos produced a nasty laugh.
That's good. That's really good, McGill. If anyone needs a good screwing, it's that guy. Speaking of which, what's this I heard about you and our lovely Imperator Turov?
I froze. Then the smile on my face slowly melted. If there was anything on this world Carlos was good at, it was exposing a man's weakness. He could kick you when you were up or down. This time his foot had landed hard upon my backside. Knowing I shouldn't do it, I glanced around to see who had heard his comment. Only Natasha and Kivi were staring at me. No one else seemed to have noticed, but of course they were the people who mattered. I gave Carlos a death stare. He grinned in return.
So it's true?
He asked, giving a little war whoop of amusement.
I was just fishing, I swear it. I had no idea. Sure, I'd heard about you going to drink with her and you waking up on the pool table. What a laugh. You must have been drunk out of your ever-loving mind. Did you shit yourself, too? That would cap it all off.
I punched him. Here we were, two men who just fought to the death back to back, standing against an overwhelming horde of insane Tau, but it didn't matter. I wanted to kill him and close his fat mouth permanently. Carlos wasn't as big as I was, but he'd always been able to take a punch. He was one of those guys who are hard to take out. I think his skull must be about an inch thick. Snarling, he punched me back, and it was on. Most of those around us had no idea what was wrong, but they'd seen us get into it before. They backed up to give us what room they could on the crowded pinnace. Rage was on my side. I pinned him after about 30 seconds. Our sides heaving, he spat out a tooth and gave me a bloody scowl.
Was she that good? He demanded. Is all this just to defend her honor? Have you forgotten everything she's done? What's happened to you, man?
The fight drained out of me then. I got up, sighing, and went to sit apart from the others. I wasn't defending Turov. I was embarrassed, that's all. In a way, I couldn't blame Carlos for gossiping in public. I'd slept with the woman, not him. Legion Varus was a pretty tight-knit group. We had plenty of secrets as far as outsiders were concerned, but inside the Legion itself, everyone heard about everything eventually. If I hadn't wanted people to know about it, if I hadn't wanted people to have a good laugh, then I shouldn't have done it. The rest of the trip back to Minotaur, I didn't talk to the others. I'd been humiliated. Turov was something of a demon in our group. Instead of lying with her being seen as an accomplishment, the others saw my transgressions as something low and degrading. I wasn't used to that, and I hadn't reacted well. When we docked up and exited the ship, I was the last one to climb out of the airlock. Kivi was waiting for me when I got out onto the hangar deck. Our eyes met. I expected her to laugh out loud or to scold me, but she didn't do either.
What happened, James? She asked. Did she make you do it?
I blinked in surprise. Not exactly.
I know she has a lot of baggage to hang over your head. She sentenced you to be permed, for God's sake. I know about that part, by the way. We all do. Did you romance her to get her to drop the sentence?
I shook my head. I don't know what happened, I admitted. We fought hard, lived through a battle, and afterward we felt like having a drink while the revival machine pumped out fresh troops. She stared at me for several long seconds, then her face darkened.
So, you're telling me you really are some kind of man-whore?
Come on, Kiwi, I said. You've died, haven't you?
Of course I have.
That's right, and I've watched you do it plenty of times. Sometimes we live, sometimes we die and come back. Either way, it rattles our minds. Haven't you come out of a tough fight and felt like celebrating? Sometimes sex is just a way of dealing with a bad situation. Kiwi sucked in a deep breath and sighed.
Okay, she said. I know what you're talking about. I know that feeling. It's just that... Turov? How could you? She's such a witch. She's so mean. I can't visualize you doing this act, even if she did come back all young and cute again. That part is totally unfair, by the way. She should never have come back young again. It's wrong.
I didn't know quite what to say, so I said nothing and started walking again. Kiwi fell into step beside me.
So, she said, if it wasn't some kind of sexual payoff, how did you convince her to let you off the hook? She had you convicted and ready to be permed.
I saved her, I said. I revived her first, and then we fought hard together. I think she liked that. Kiwi punched my arm. I didn't feel it, but my armor rattled.
Don't be fooled, Kiwi warned me. Just because she had a weak moment with you, that means nothing. Her personality is poison. She'll turn right back into the snake she's always been.
I knew she was probably right, and I nodded. But part of me hoped Kiwi was wrong. Experiences did change people. Physically, Turov wasn't the same person she'd been before she'd died. So many years of aging had been lost, and an old mind in a young body wasn't entirely old anymore. I knew youth had to be battling against experience within her. If I'd been a psychologist, it might have been an interesting experiment to watch play out. After talking with Kiwi, I felt better. At least there was one person who didn't hate me for what I'd done. Graves demanded my report after I reached third unit's module. I gave it pridefully. I described the battle in the streets and reported the deaths I'd recorded on my tapper. Sir, I concluded, I think the mission has to be considered a success. Installing the virus took longer than we expected, and we had to do it within very close proximity with active hostiles. However, I managed to improvise and get the locals to spread it from here on. Now all we've got to do is wait. Graves nodded thoughtfully. Too bad it didn't come sooner. Events have progressed, and I don't think there's any way to turn back now. Unfortunate. I frowned.
What are you talking about, sir?
Never mind. Why don't you head up to see the Imperator? She specifically requested that you report to her in person. Graves looked at me, deadpan. Was there a hint of amusement in his eyes? I felt a hot rush of embarrassment.
Okay, sir.
Thank you. Dismissed, McGill. He turned away, giving his head a shake. I left his office feeling uncertain what he was thinking. He'd hinted that my mission hadn't concluded quickly enough. I hoped that didn't have anything to do with the fact the station was still sinking into the atmosphere. Had we made a Herculean effort only to find we were a day late? Trying to push such thoughts out of my head, I hurried to the lift and rode up to Imperator Turov's office. I was greeted at the door by an armed MP, a veteran. He looked at me and my sidearm with displeasure. I think I should hold on to that for you, Specialist, the MP said. I frowned and put my hand over the gun. I don't think so, not this time. Another voice interrupted our discussion, which was about to become heated.
Let him have it, Sullivan,
Imperator Turov said. She'd come out of her door to see what was going on. I couldn't get over how young-sounding she was now. She turned and vanished back into her office, and I followed. I resisted an urge to grin at the MP. I'd gotten myself into enough trouble lately. The door swished shut behind me.
I looked around, but didn't see any armed men ready to jump me. I tried to relax, but failed.
You wanted to see me, sir?
Yes, specialist, she said. Could you come over here and help me?
Help you with what, sir? I trailed off as the answer to my question was immediately obvious. She was opening her uniform. My jaw hung low as more skin was revealed with each passing second.
Sir? I asked. I'm not sure this is an appropriate time.
Shut up and pull this over my head. Or do I have to do everything myself?
I heaved a sigh. She turned around and kept stripping down. I felt my pulse rate increase.
This isn't really fair, sir, I said.
She looked over her bare shoulder and laughed.
Are you kidding me? Are you trying to tell me you're an innocent? I'm not pulling rank. I'm not ordering you to do this. I'm just feeling, I don't know, different since my revival. I haven't felt this kind of hormonal rush in years.
No, I didn't mean that. I mean, it's not fair to display yourself so brazenly in front of a man. We can't always do the right thing when we're faced with this kind of temptation. She stared at me with a mix of confusion and growing irritation.
What is this crap?
She demanded, mostly naked now.
You go around screwing everything that moves, McGill, and now, suddenly, you're a Boy Scout?
Well, it's not like that. People already suspect, sir. They know about what happened the other night between us.
Ah,
she said, stepping out of her shoes. She strutted toward me around her desk. My heart began to pound. She was buck naked and looking great. Her steps were like those of a dancer, lithe and graceful.
I get it, she said, touching my cheek with a single finger. Your friends are making fun of you. They're calling you names like boy toy. Is that it?
Hardly, sir.
Stop calling me sir, damn it.
Yes, sir. Galena. You see? Right there. This is kind of weird. You're a high-level officer. I'm just one step above a grunt.
What? Are you bargaining for rank already? Forget it. You're not getting such perks that easily.
I rolled my eyes. This isn't... She kissed me then, full on the mouth. She pressed herself up against me, and I almost grabbed her.
Get out of that damned armor, she hissed at me. I can only touch your face.
I realized I had the power to walk out on her. I didn't have to put up with this. I could turn around, hit the door, and step outside. Maybe the MP would see his commander naked, and maybe he wouldn't, but either way, I'd escape, and I doubted Imperator Galena Turov would ever try tackling me again. Oh, she might crap on me and give me a hard time. What else was new? But she wouldn't risk a second humiliation. Scorning her would come with a price, of course. She'd be pissed, probably for life. But I was considering it seriously, I swear it. I really was. Then she did something dirty. She popped off my gauntlet and placed my hand on her bare skin. I lost it then. Her flesh was warm and smooth and urgent. What was I thinking as we stripped off my armor together and got busy on her desk? I don't know. I don't think men have complex thoughts at moments like these. If they do think, they probably aren't enjoying themselves as much as they should be. Imperator Turov and I didn't hold back. If anything, our second time was more intense than the first had been. Our passion was brief, but thorough. I had to wonder afterward if Turov had developed a thing for me over the years. Maybe it was only now, in her new young body, that she had the self-confidence to demand my attentions. Whatever her motivations were, her seduction had definitely worked. Leaning back in a chair, I sighed heavily and pulled my armor back on. While I did so, Galena watched me with predatory eyes. I could tell the smirk on her face was one of satisfaction. I didn't much care what kind of fantasies of domination and triumph were going on inside her little head. I'd had a good time, and I figured that since everyone in the Legion knew about us, it didn't make much difference anyhow. "Sir," I asked, as I completed snapping up my kit. She was dressed now, too. That was a shame, but I couldn't have everything.
"What is it, Specialist?"
I heard something odd from Graves. He indicated the success of my mission had come too late, that it was too bad I hadn't managed to cure the Tau earlier. Do you know what he's talking about?
No, but the recovery of systems has been unexpectedly good. The station is rising again, slowly. I underestimated what they could do to help themselves. The Tau themselves are repairing their station with uncharacteristic energy. I'm surprised by that. There's no budget for the repairs, after all. They're working together as if they expect a huge payoff. Mysterious.
I frowned, thinking of my pyramid scheme. Could it have gone that far? I squirmed in my seat.
What was Graves talking about, then? I asked.
Her eyes dipped down to her desk, then raised back up to meet mine.
We were contacted again, James, by the cephalopods. While you were on the station fighting, I had to make a hard decision, and I made it.
Frowning, I leaned forward. Could you be more clear, sir?
They delivered an ultimatum to us about 2 hours ago.
What kind of ultimatum, sir?
They demanded payment for their losses at Zeta Herculis. They said they would hold humanity personally responsible if we didn't agree. It was an unfortunate situation, and I have to admit at the time, I didn't think your scheme was going to work. You have to understand that, James.
Our eyes met, and she stared at me with cold concern. I frowned. I wasn't getting it yet, but what I was getting I didn't like at all.
What did you do? I demanded. That's not an appropriate tone, James.
Come on, I said. Not appropriate? You just jumped my bones right here on this desk.
Threatening my reputation won't gain you anything, she said dangerously.
I laughed incredulously. Just tell me what you did. What was the nature of this ultimatum?
The cephalopods are an intransigent race. They demanded material restitution for their losses on their colony world. Keep in mind, the Nerbs did burn their entire colony down to the bedrock.
Yeah, I said. But what did you give them?
The station.
We stared at one another. My sweat and hers was mingling and cooling on our bodies, and I could still smell her hair in my nostrils. But I felt cold nonetheless.
You gave them the station?
Are they going to haul it off to their home world, or what? She shook her head slowly.
They're looting it. They're docking up now, I would expect. They'll board with their slavers and their regular troops. They'll round up the people they want as captives and take whatever else they can find before it sinks down into the atmosphere and burns up.
I thought you said the repairs were working.
They are.
She said, shrugging.
But I expect that attacking and pillaging the structure will disrupt that process.
Are you totally insane?
James, she said sternly, I understand you're feeling emotional about this topic, as you just fought to save the Tau. But try to see it from my perspective. The cephalopods may well have the power to wipe out Earth. Battlefleet 921 might come back next year and wipe them out in return. But then again, it might take decades. I can't risk our species to save a few million Tau.
I nodded slowly. I did see her way of thinking, at least partially. You figured I would fail, I said, and that the Tau were as good as dead and batshit crazy. Is that it? You might as well get some mileage out of them. Maybe they'll even kill a few squids for good measure. Damn, what a way to serve and protect.
Rudely put, but essentially, you are correct.
For several seconds I sat there staring into space. Turov kept on talking about something, but I didn't hear her. Finally, after those seconds passed, I stood up. Galina's eyes widened involuntarily. My movement had been purposeful, and I was armed and wearing battle armor again. I realized then what she must have understood in that moment, that I could tear her apart with my gauntlets if I wanted to. But I didn't attack her. I was upset, but taking it out on her wasn't going to change anything. "Sir," I said loudly, "am I dismissed?" She looked at me for a second and then nodded.
"Dismissed, Specialist."
I left her then, clanking on my way out. The MP outside looked up at me and gave me a smirk. I wanted to bash him one, but I held myself back. I was on a new mission now, and nothing was going to get in my way. Nothing. Chapter 40. I didn't think I could manage my plan without help, so I headed down to Third Unit's module and stepped into the common room. Everyone looked up when I appeared in the doorway. A few of them shouted greetings, but most were quiet. A few got up and left immediately. Not a good sign. Spotting Natasha, I walked toward her. She avoided my eyes and got up, packing away a pile of equipment. "Is that your buzzer control system?" I asked her. She glanced at me, then looked at the deck.
"I've got to go."
I said, looking around. Grins met me, mixed with a few frowns. Some people snickered. I began to suspect the worst. Natasha tried to slip past me, but I reached out and clasped her wrist. Women hate that, but this was an emergency.
"Let go of me, James,"
she said, still not looking at me.
"Listen for 1 second. Turov has sold them out. She's letting everyone on the station die."
Natasha finally looked at me.
"What?"
I quickly explained what I was talking about. She seemed conflicted.
"There's nothing we can do," she said. "I'm leaving."
"Look," I told her quietly, "I have a plan. It might work, but I need your help. I need my friends."
"I'm not doing anything for you."
I looked over her shoulder at what she was holding. It was her buzzer equipment.
"You've been spying on me, haven't you?" I asked.
"It doesn't matter."
"Well, apparently it does to you. Let's forget about whatever it was you saw with your spy bugs. People are about to be permed, millions of them. They might be annoying aliens, but I don't think they deserve to be enslaved and slaughtered wholesale."
Natasha let out her breath until she looked deflated. She sat down quickly.
"Just tell me what you want to do, James."
I told her, and she didn't look any happier.
"Are you crazy?"
she demanded in a harsh whisper.
"I get that a lot." "We can't take over the ship."
"We won't have to. At least I hope not."
"James, there are 4 full units revived now. Not just a few people will stand in your way, hundreds will. There's the Germanica unit, too. They're back to full strength."
"Yeah, well, I know about them."
"That's not all. Turov had them revive both the Tribunes, Drusus and Armel."
"Really? That does change things. Wait for me here and work on those calculations."
"You think you can just order me around?"
she demanded.
"You didn't even ask if I would help or not."
"Well, will you?"
"We could get permed."
"People are getting permed back on the station right now."
"They aren't people, James. Not exactly."
I frowned at her. "Look, the Tau are a lot friendlier than the squids. If Klaver hadn't set them off with his hollow box virus, they would still be peacefully selling everyone their gizmos. Instead, we abused them thoroughly, and now we're letting the squids have a turn." Natasha winced, knowing I was right.
"All right," she said. "I'll see what I can cook up."
"Thanks," I said. "I can't promise you won't regret it, but it's the right thing to do." I slid the key across the table, and she took it quickly. She stood up and headed for her workshop. She looked like a condemned woman heading up the steps to the guillotine. Heading in the opposite direction, I caught up with Carlos in the rec room.
Oh, no, he said, catching sight of me. Just forget it. Don't even start with me.
What are you talking about?
I don't know, and I don't want to know. Whatever you just pulled on Natasha, save it. I don't want to hear a word.
Frowning, I approached him anyway. He was standing in the no-grav zone, ready to exercise with nothing on but a skin-tight smart-cloth suit.
Mind if I join you? I asked. I sure as hell do mind.
I shed my outer gear and joined him anyway. There were a few others in the room as we drifted and dragged ourselves along the ceiling, using rings bolted there for the purpose. But they were out of earshot and making too much noise to listen.
Carlos, I need your help. No, you don't. You need a psychiatrist.
I gave him the short version concerning the Tau and their predicament. Oddly enough, the story struck him as funny.
You're kidding me, he asked. These heartless bastards have been sold to the squids as slaves? That's irony at its best. No, it isn't, I said, becoming annoyed.
Well, yeah, maybe it is. But it's not just ironic, it's tragic. These are people we came here to protect. Now we've sold them out to the squids.
Better them than us, brother.
I could tell I was going to have to take an entirely different approach to get Carlos to help me. Pulling on his heartstrings was hopeless.
Let's try to take the long view, I said. What do you think the squids will do next? I don't know. Maybe they'll fart around in this system, plundering it long enough to get the attention of the Galactics. Then, hopefully, the core systems will send back our fleet and rip off a few trillion of their tentacles. It'll be calamari time.
Yeah, I said. That might be how it goes. What do you think the Galactics will do when they see how their new enforcers wimped out? Carlos frowned.
They aren't going to like that.
No. The Nerbs will have a special crime on their books for it. You know they will.
Yeah. It will be our fault somehow. They left us in charge.
I was nodding. He was following along, and I thought I might have him almost in the bag. We'd warmed up on the rings and now glided into the sparring pit. This amounted to a spherical cage. Once the door slammed shut, we began to wrestle. This is harder than it sounds in Null G. We went into one spinning, grunting clinch after another, but neither of us could pin the other. Let's try another hypothetical, I said, straining. What if the Galactics don't come back? How will it play out then? Carlos disengaged, and I let him. He looked even less happy.
That will really suck, he said. The squids are ruthless. They'll come for Earth after a while and take us out. We'll be the next slave race on their menu. They already like to catch and breed our kind. It would be a natural for them.
Exactly, I said. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized I was talking myself into action as much as I was talking him into it.
We're damned if we do and damned if we don't, Carlos said, doing a flip and floating down to the floor.
No, I said. We're damned if we don't do anything, no matter whether the Galactics come back or not. He climbed out of the sparring cage and I followed him. Carlos looked at me.
What do you want to do then, besides screw our cold-hearted Imperator?
I let his comment slide with difficulty. We've got to knock out the squids. He shook his head and snorted.
Just like that?
Yes. Seeing I was serious, he floated closer and lowered his voice.
Just go to Turov. Butter her up, if you know what I mean. Get her to see reason. We'll hit the squids just as they unload into the station. That's got to be the moment.
I tried that already, I said. She wasn't listening. Carlos smirked.
So it's true, then. I heard it from the MPs, but I didn't believe it.
What?
I asked, my heart sinking. They said you and Turov had another little meeting, right there in her office. You are insatiable, like a goat, I mean.
I launched myself at him and we locked arms. We went into a spin. Others watched, laughing. It had to be a comical scene.
Let go or we'll land bad, Carlos said, gritting his teeth.
No, I said. 50-50, you'll be on the bottom. I'll take my chances. We struggled in a clinch and crashed into a wall. Unfortunately, it was my back and skull that took the brunt of the impact.
All right,
Carlos said, drifting away and breathing hard.
I'll help. But first, you've got to tell me about Turov. What's the deal between you two? Is this becoming a habit? I don't know if I can take that.
What do you mean, take it? I asked, rubbing the back of my head. Blood wet my finger.
Making love to a lady more than once changes everything,
Carlos told me.
That officially makes this an affair, not just a random event, McGill.
The second time makes it an affair, huh? At what point does she turn into an actual girlfriend?
I don't know. 10th time, I guess.
I shook my head. I bow to the expert. You know it all, don't you, Carlos? This made him angry. A lot of things make Carlos angry, but any reference to his relative lack of success with women always did the trick.
If you can't beat them, then screw them, is that it?
Carlos demanded.
That's your policy, isn't it, McGill? And don't lie to me. Everyone knows what you've been doing with Turov. Everyone.
Is my policy such a bad one? I asked. Sort of like, make love, not war.
Yeah, sure. You disgust me.
Only because you aren't as good at the game as I am. Throwing his hands up, Carlos traveled hand over hand to the exit and left the chamber. He slammed the door on the way out. I was just as happy to see him go. How could someone be selfish and judgmental at the same time? I didn't get that. I was plenty selfish, too. I'd be the first to admit that. But at least I didn't go around giving everyone else I met a lecture on how to behave. Cursing, I remembered I had to have his help. I dragged myself over the rattling rings to the exit and followed him.
I talked, and you promised to help if I did,
I said when I caught up to him.
I know. I'm heading for the armory, aren't I?
This isn't going to be like that. Get on a light suit with a good seal. He eyed me, shaking his head.
I don't like this plan already. Why can't we just go in with our guns hot?
Because we don't want to be fried for it afterward, that's why. He grumbled, but he listened. We got into light suits and wore nothing but air tanks and helmets. No sidearms. No weapons at all. Natasha met us out in the hallway.
Graves might be getting suspicious, she told me. He's ordering a full roll call at 1700.
We'll have to move fast. What have you got? She handed each of us a grenade. They weren't shrapnel grenades. They were silvery canisters about the size and shape of a beer can.
You pull the ring on the top and toss them close. Not much range. No odor, no visible smoke trail.
I eyed the canister dubiously. It didn't look pro.
You sure this will work?
Are you sure you want to do this at all?
She asked in return.
Because this is your idea, and I'm willing to bail out right now.
What about the cameras and their tappers?
They'll be blanked out. That's the best I could do.
I sighed.
No way you could record some kind of fake squid attack?
No,
she snorted.
Not unless you give me a studio and a week to work it up. Besides, who would believe the squids did this?
No one, I admitted.
Well, that's it. Let's roll, people. Black it out, Natasha.
She licked her lips and studied a tiny screen.
You sure you want to do this, James? Really sure?
Oh, yeah, Carlos said. He's sure. If it's dangerous, insane, and just plain wrong, McGill's your man.
Natasha reached up and activated the script. Moments later, the lights in the passageway went dark, and I started to run. We burst in on the tactical ops people 2 seconds after we'd rolled the canisters in. They were mostly unconscious, but one of them stared at me from on his knees, grabbing the console with both hands like a drowning man. Then he toppled onto the floor and sprawled onto his back out cold.
I thought you said this stuff was instantaneous, I complained. That guy saw me, I'm sure he did.
I did the best I could, Natasha said.
Not good enough. Let's call the whole thing off, Carlos suggested.
I stood there in the room. Wisps of vapor drifted toward the vents overhead. The gas the small canisters had released wasn't invisible as Natasha had said it would be either. For a sick second, I wondered what would happen if it filled Minotaur and knocked people out all over the ship. Anything seemed possible at this moment.
No, I said firmly. Natasha, try to delete their minds 1 minute back. Carlos, help me with the controls.
I pulled out the galactic key and approached the console.
J, James, fooling with their memory backups is dangerous. We could purge months or even years. Besides, that won't help unless we kill them. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, I said. Just do it.
Carlos made a sound of pain and worry, but he didn't say anything. That had to be some kind of a first for him. I approached the console and punched in the coordinates that Natasha had worked out. Outside, the huge cylindrical barrels of Minotaur's broadsides began to move, swiveling and locking on to their new target, the squid ship. Chapter 41. You'd think that after all I'd been through with the squids, launching a surprise attack on their ship would be an easy thing to do. But it wasn't. I'm not totally stupid. I knew I was pretty much starting an interstellar war. But I took solace in the fact that the squids had started this whole thing, or maybe that the Galactics had. Either way, it wasn't Earthmen who had launched the first attack. Squids had been abusing our colonists on Zeta Herculis for decades. They'd also attacked the Galactics and taken out Corvus back in the middle of our last campaign. In turn, it was the Galactics that had melted their colony world to component organic molecules. None of these actions had been initiated by my people, but we were making our first move right now. As soon as the broadsides had swung around and locked, I hit the ignition touch area on the console. The firing process began, but rather than a roaring sound, an alarm rang. The console lit up with warning lights and flashing orange failure messages. "What's wrong?" I shouted.
"You have to close the blast shields over the windows first, or we'll be killed in the back blast."
"Right," I said, slamming a physical switch home. The shields began to roll swiftly over the windows, blocking my view of the planet and the station.
"Let's get out of here," I said. "The guns will fire the second the shields are down."
We ran like we'd never run before. We were three ghosts in sleek suits, and we made it 100 meters or so before the broadsides boomed. I was tossed onto the deck by the reverberation. One second the floor had been 2 meters under my feet, then it seemed to buck up and slam into my face. I climbed to my feet painfully. Carlos hooked a hand under my armpit and hauled me up.
"No napping now, McGill,"
he grunted, propelling me forward. On my feet and staggering, I broke into a shambling run again. The plan at this point was relatively simple. We'd take the back passages to our unit module and stretch out on our bunks. The vid blockers Natasha had set up would expire, and we'd appear as innocent as the day was long. The plan almost worked, too. Sure, there were klaxons going off, and Natasha was summoned to join the tech brigade investigating what kind of malfunction had occurred. But for about 3 minutes, Carlos and I actually got to lie there in our bunks. We fought to control our breathing and contrived to shape our faces into a semblance of innocence.
"McGill,"
Carlos whispered down to me.
"What?" "Hey, you owe me, right? You know that, don't you?"
"Yeah, I guess I do."
"Good, here's what I want you to do."
I rolled my eyes. Apparently, he'd already worked out what form of repayment he wanted on our newly established debt.
"First," he said, "when all this goes tits up, which I totally know it's going to do, leave me out of the story, okay?"
I thought about it and shrugged.
"Sure thing," I said. "I did this whole thing solo. They can perm me, but I won't budge from that story."
"Good man. Secondly..."
"For crying out loud, isn't that good enough?" I demanded.
"Hold on, the second thing is easy. Just tell me how it was with Turov. I mean, is she as hot as she looks? Is she a screamer?"
I rolled my eyes.
"She brings the house down, Carlos. Every time."
"Ha! I knew it!"
"You happy now?"
"Actually, there is one more..."
I never heard what his third demand was, because at that moment the door tore apart. If you'd never been in a quiet room when the door is literally torn off the hinges, you can't know just how shocking it can be. One second we were talking quietly in our bunks, pretending innocence. The metal door squealed and crumpled, being pulled outward like tinfoil. There in the doorway stood a nightmare that was worse than any squid that had ever lived. It was a battle suit, a monstrosity of metal claws and whining servos. Worse,
I knew the face behind the visor, the being who was driving the metal terror. I'd seen her in this battle suit before, and I knew what it could do. Imperator Turov was young and pretty, but her face was twisted into such a state of rage that I barely recognized her. Shouldering her way inside the small chamber, she dented up the framing bulkhead and dropped the hatch itself, which was still clenched in one gripper.
"Imperator!"
I shouted, jumping to my feet and standing at attention. Carlos followed my cue and did the same thing. He looked like he was about to pee himself, and I probably wore the same expression.
"McGill,"
she said, rotating the battle suit's upper body back and forth.
"McGill and Ortiz. Is that it?
Where are the others?
You don't have the brains to do this by yourselves."
"Sorry, sir," I said. "Has something gone wrong?" She hissed at me. She honest to God let loose a hiss of displeasure.
"Are you going to bullshit me now?"
she demanded.
"Are you honestly going to give that a try at this point?"
The volume of her external microphone had been cranked up punishingly high, and I winced as her words washed over me. They had a slightly muffled sound to them as she was inside an enclosed environment. I faced the machine resolutely. Standing a hair taller than me in her suit, she looked down with a predatory anger. The suit's balancing tail section swerved and twisted in reaction to her every motion. Carlos, up until this point, had said nothing.
"Sir," he said at last, "whatever McGill has done, sir, I wasn't involved. I apologize for sharing a room with him, but I don't think it would be fair to..."
He broke off as Turov had thrust a gripper in his direction. It flexed and snapped closed. Blood shot out as if a balloon full of red liquid had popped. Carlos's head had been snipped off. Just like that. I stared dumbly at the floor where his eyes stared back. Those eyes were flung wide and possibly appeared even more surprised than I was. Turov bent over the head and spoke to it.
"If you can still hear me, Ortiz," she said, "I accept your apology."
I thought about attacking her then, but I knew it was hopeless. In fact, such a move might provoke a second beheading. I stood at attention and averted my eyes from the mess on the floor. Turov turned her attention back to me. The servos in her suit whined as she leaned the suit's jaws close to my face.
"Why did you do it, McGill? Why did you blast the squid ship to atoms?"
Despite everything, I felt a rush of relief. After all, I'd never actually witnessed the broadside salvo striking the squid ship and taking it out. Now I knew that, even if I died today for the final time, it had not all been in vain. I looked at her, square in the eye.
"Because we're already at war with the squids, Imperata," I said.
"There's no point in denying it. Did you really think they'd be satisfied with looting Tech World? No way. Giving them an easy victory would only cause them to report back that we're weak and ripe for an attack. More of their ships would come. At that point, Earth would be faced with war anyway. This way, we struck the first blow."
"Such decisions aren't yours to make, McGill. You're only a frigging specialist."
"You're right about that, sir," I said. "I know I went beyond the bounds." Turov began to pace around me in a tight circle. The heavy metal feet of her machine crumped close to mine, threatening to crush my bones and pop my toes.
"I don't even understand how you did it," she fumed. "How could you have convinced the broadside crew to fire their weapons? They aren't even your friends."
I glanced at her, realizing she had that part of the story wrong. "I guess my arguments persuaded everyone except for you, sir," I said.
"That's the conclusion I came to, as incredible as it seems. The crewmen said they'd been knocked out or some such nonsense, but I know how this ship operates. They had to operate the controls personally. The system is linked to their biometrics."
I nodded thoughtfully. "What did they say when you pointed this out, sir?"
"They tried to bullshit me, so I killed them both."
She reached out a gripper
and snapped it several times in front of my face. A tiny splatter of blood and gore flew. I thought I saw dark.